Sporty greetings to all of our Voice of America listeners. I'm VOA's Andrew Palcheski in Washington, filling in for Sonny Young. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
The Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports.
The Sunny Side of Sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
We begin today with some breaking news out of Brazil. Authorities there have arrested 10 suspects who they say were planning to carry out a series of terror attacks at the Rio Olympics. The group was allegedly influenced by the ISIS terror organization, although the only contact they had with the group was through the internet and messaging apps like WhatsApp and Telegram. Brazilian authorities stressed that the group was amateur and disorganized, and that they moved in to break up the group before they could plan any specific terror attacks. We'll have more on this breaking story as it continues to develop. We also have the latest on a developing story we've been covering all week. Earlier today, sporting's highest deliberative body, the Court of Arbitration for Sport, ruled against Russia's appeal of a ban on their track and field athletes from the 2016 Olympic Games. That means that all 68 Russian athletes who qualified to compete in Rio will not be allowed to compete at the Games. Matthew Reeb, Secretary General of the Court of Arbitration for Sport, spoke outside the court's headquarters in Lausanne, Switzerland today to announce that the appeal had been dismissed.
As a consequence, the Russian Olympic Committee is not entitled to nominate Russian track and field athletes for the Olympic Games, since the International Olympic Committee was not a party to these arbitrations. The CAS has no jurisdiction to determine whether the IOC is entitled to accept or refuse the nomination by the Russian Olympic Committee of Russian track and field athletes to compete at the Olympic Games in Rio.
It's a huge setback for those athletes and Russia's track and field program, and it could also have major consequences on all of Russia's Olympic hopefuls. Now, as we told you yesterday, the International Olympic Committee will decide whether or not to ban Russia's athletes from the Olympics this weekend after this ruling from the Court of Arbitration. Now, today's ruling against Russia could give the IOC justification to follow the World Anti-Doping Agency's recommendation to ban all of Russia's athletes from the Games rather than banning individual doping violators. Well, over the past few days, we've heard from Sidney Levy, the CEO of Rio 2016, the Olympic Organizing Committee. He's talked about fears over the Zika virus, increased security to keep the Games safe, and the amount of money it takes to see and run all those Olympic events. Today's the last segment of our interview, and in it, Levy tells VOA's Carol Castiel about the public's enthusiasm for the Olympics and his hopes for how the Games will turn out.
We were worried since the beginning with the popular reaction to the Games. It was something we worried about, and we saw during the World Cup protests in the streets, people against the World Cup, and so we decided early on to split the budgets in the public. What's public is for staying in the city, and what's private is for just the organization of the Games. And we think that strategy worked pretty well because our polls show that 75% of the Rio population support the Games, which is much more than London, for example, or even Beijing. And so I think we're successful in including them. For example, we're having 12,000 dancers at the opening ceremony, and we got them in the favelas of Rio, almost all of them. We got, training, sambistas. You can go there today and see their training, and it's wonderful, really. It's wonderful. They're showing new types of dances, and they're going to showcase this for all over the world during the opening ceremony, where 3 billion people are supposed to watch. So I think this is an opportunity that won't happen again. This is it. You got to use them. And I think people of Rio understand that, and it's working around that. And we're pretty happy with that.
And on a personal level, Sidney Levy, you know, how did you get involved in the games? I mean, you have a long career as a businessman in Madrid. I know you spent time in London. And how did this come about, and why are you doing it?
Well, just by chance. I think it's a normal situation. When London run the games, they have the sports world getting the games to the country. But then later, as things get more complicated, they bring in the business world. In London, they brought as CEO a guy who was CEO of the Goldman Sachs. And he kind of put in the governance of a private company that helps to go through that period. So it's, in my case, it's pure chance. I'm very grateful. It's a chance to do something for a country. So it's an honor.
Indeed. Well, they're very lucky to have you with your background. And I just want to revert to something, unfortunately, again, not necessarily the fault of Rio, that's for sure, but just another issue that puts a damper on things, and then that's this issue of doping. Just in the weeks running up to the Olympics, we found out that a laboratory that was set to handle drug testing at the Games was suspended by the World Anti-Doping Agency in a new escalation of this doping crisis. And now we see many, you know, Russian track and field athletes being suspended because of doping. How do you see this impairing the Games?
So our commitment is for clean games, of course. You cannot have games that are not clean. It damages the whole system. So we built a brand new laboratory, and it got ready some 2 or 3 months ago. We staffed them with university people from Rio. And the first measure that was taken by the International Federation, they thought it was not up to standards. So we're bringing, in fact, today, international management to help us guide through the certification. And if necessary, we're going to bring all international professionals to help us this. But we cannot fail on that, and we won't.
Any closing thoughts you would like to share with our audience, who are, I'm sure everyone will be glued to their television sets or radios for the games? What would you like to say?
Well, the Olympic movement is a beautiful thing. It's a peace movement. This is where the Israelis and the Palestinians sleep in the same building, have breakfast in the same table. So it's a wonderful thing for humanity. Rio de Janeiro is one of the best cities in the world. There's nature. The people are very warm. And it's really an experience just to be in Rio. Well, these two things together is just once in a lifetime. This won't happen again in our lifetime. So I hope everybody can come and enjoy that, because it won't happen again.
Our thanks to Sidney Levy, the CEO of the Rio 2016 Olympic Organizing Committee, and my VOA colleague Carol Castiel for their insightful interview. When you tune into the Olympics, you expect to see swimmers, runners, gymnasts, not necessarily an American football player. After all, American-style football isn't an Olympic sport. But that isn't stopping Nate Ebner, a safety for the New England Patriots football team, from living out his Olympic dreams. Ebner has played in the National Football League since 2012, but before that he was an avid rugby player. So he'll be competing on the U.S. men's rugby team in Rio, an achievement all the more impressive because, as we mentioned earlier this week, rugby is making its return to the Olympics after a 92-year absence. Here's Ebner talking with AFP TV about his Olympic anticipation.
I've never won an Olympic medal or even been a part of the Olympics, so I can't really say what that's like, but I can speak for winning a Super Bowl was a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and it's something I'll always remember, and I could imagine that being a part of the Olympics, let alone winning a medal or anything like that, would be a very humbling experience that would be unforgettable as well.
Now, it's worth noting that if the U.S. men's rugby team medals at the Games, Ebner would be just the third National Football League player ever to have both a Super Bowl championship and an Olympic medal. But Nate Ebner isn't the first NFL player to compete in the Olympics. Our Tadi Abeje has these facts about the National Football League's involvement in the Olympic Games. The San Francisco 49ers have had the most team members compete in the Olympics, with three players competing in athletics: Ray Norton in the 1960 Games, James Owens in the 1976 Games, and Michael Carter in the 1980 Games. In fact, the majority of NFL players in the Olympics have participated in athletics, specifically the decathlon. And Glenn Davis of the Detroit Lions has earned the most medals of any NFL player, winning three gold medals as a hurdler and sprinter in the 1956 and 1960 Games. And speaking of American football, here's a Throwback Thursday interview for all of our listeners. Last month, my VOA colleague Peter Clody spoke with Ziggy Ansah, a defensive end with the National Football League's Detroit Lions. Ansah was born in Accra, Ghana, making him one of a handful of U.S. professional football players from Africa.
I grew up playing soccer and a little bit of basketball. I picked it up in high school. Mm-hmm. Never knew what football was, but long story short, after high school, back in Prisec, I applied to go to BYU. I wanted to play basketball for a couple years. That didn't work out. I switched out to do track because I did a little bit of track in high school. And, during that whole process, a couple of my friends were like, why don't you just go try for football? And I was like, I ain't doing that, you know. It's crazy. I don't know the game. I don't know the rules. Never played before.
So when did you finally decide that I'm going to embrace this, I'm going to play this?
I think from the get-go, you know, I was eager to learn the game. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to let anything take me, you know, from studying the game and knowing, you know, like the rules and everything that pertains to the game. So I would say I was really focused from the start.
How did you get to embrace the rules? Because the rules are totally different from basketball and, of course, soccer.
Way different. it's crazy. I just took it a day at a time. I had really good teammates that were willing to help me, see me grow. For my coaches to put me on the roster, I think they saw some sort of potential in me. And that was what, you know, kept me going. It wasn't easy, but I just had to stay focused and keep learning.
You know, when Ghanaians see American football players put all those equipment on, they're like, what the heck is this? How did you get acquainted with it? How comfortable were you when you started using it?
I don't even know how this is going to go over my head, over my legs. Like, what the heck am I doing, you know?
Right. How challenging was it?
Learning and playing is like two different things, you know. It's like studying the theory and actually doing the practical. The book part of it wasn't too bad. You know, it was all new language to me, but I was able to pick it up pretty quick.
So let's go back to BYU, the transition from there to the pro life. How was it? Take me through the process.
In college, it's very easy to say, you know, this guy is the best guy. Mm-hmm. But when you come to the pros, everybody's big, fast, and strong.
How stiff is the competition?
The stakes are high. The rewards are high.
You were recently in Africa with one of your mates. How did it go?
Ever since I've been in the league, I try to go back every year, you know, just to stay with the family because they're not all able to come out this way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this time around, I was able to go with my teammate. Mm-hmm. We went to the Osu Castle. Right. I think, you know, we learned about, you know, like the slavery, where our ancestors came from. That was a pretty neat experience. I met a couple guys that were, like, so eager to learn the game. They're like, hey, what's up? I'm like, you know, stay focused. You know, what one thing I'm, like, trying to do is hold a camp, you know, out there and trying to have some of these NFL guys come help out, you know, like the coaches coming in, just to, you know, like introduce the game to the country and all these young guys. Because man, like when I look out there, I see a lot of potentials.
Is that the reason why you were saying that the game should be taken to Africa?
Africa contributes like a larger part of this whole world and. You know, like being out there and seeing how people are so eager to learn the game and seeing the potentials in all these young guys, I think, you know, bringing a game out there would be really good for us. for the continent as a whole. The NFL ever said they're going to play a game in Africa, I promise you them tickets are going to be sold out in a second. Because, you know, there's a lot of guys out there that tell me, you know, I watch the game on the internet, it's like so late, but I'm going to stay up and watch you play. You know, it's just so humbling to me that, you know, all these guys are like willing to learn the game. Mm-hmm. You know, they're willing to know what this game is all about.
So from what you've learned so far, how do you give back?
These are great fans. I love the city of Detroit. I think that they like give it their all to support the sporting teams that we have out here. And I know that this city is like dying for a champion.
What do you bring to ensure camaraderie between yourself and your folks in the team?
We want to be the most united group.
So in let's say in 5, 10, 15 years from now, how will Ziggy see himself? What will Ziggy see himself doing?
You know, I think I'm a see a successful football player, you know, that strived to get what he wanted. A guy that never gave up.
Ziggy Ansah and the Detroit Lions will kick off their 2016 NFL season on September 11th against the rival Indianapolis Colts.
Voice of America!
This is Sonny Side of Sports and Daddy Shoki telling you, Sonny Side of Sports, Sonny Side of Sports.
Voice of America!
You're tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. I'm Andrew Palcheski in Washington, sitting in for the vacationing Sonny Young. You know, I loved the enthusiasm in that promo. And we have another enthusiastic Facebook comment from one of our listeners, O'Neill Roberts Esamba in Liberia. He writes, "Hope you're enjoying your vacation, Sonny." Well, thank you very much, O'Neill. I'm sure he is enjoying that rest and relaxation, and I will be sure to pass along your words to him. Let's take a look now at what's trending in the sports world. We have some big changes across sports that we can talk about that are trending. Let's start with the National Football League, as we've been talking about. The National Football League has announced today that they're going to be hiring a chief medical officer for the first time. Now, this is a big move for the National Football League because of concerns over the past few years about the head trauma that comes from playing football, particularly chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE. Now, this is a disease that can develop after repeated concussions and blows to the head. Of course, football is a very rough and tumble sport. Even with the helmets, there can be a lot of head trauma. So this move is being praised on social media, people tweeting out saying it's going to improve the health and safety of the players, and it's a positive step forward. But there are some skeptics, like Bruce Goldman. He tweets out that it's just a public relations move, nothing more. Others are hopeful that the players will have some influence on who is selected as this chief medical officer, hoping that they will help to improve the players' lives. Another big change we have in U.S. sports involves not just the U.S., but another country to our south, Mexico. Specifically, the Phoenix Suns in the National Basketball Association have announced that they will be taking on the Dallas Mavericks and the San Antonio Spurs in consecutive games in Mexico City. Now, these are set to take place January 12th and 14th, 2017. Now, the NBA has played in Mexico before. In fact, this year will mark the 25th anniversary of the first game that they played in Mexico. But this is the first time that they'll have these games back-to-back. So a lot of fans excited about this. Certainly in Phoenix, we're seeing a lot of activity on social media, but around the country and certainly in Mexico as well. Now, sports reporter Paul Coro covers sports in Phoenix. He tweets out that Suns president Jason Rowley is at the NBA Global Games, as they're calling them, and he announced this, and he said he wants to be the first NBA team for Mexico. That's the Suns' goal. This is something we've talked about on the Sunny Side of Sports in the past, is having different teams from the U.S. sports leagues around the world. There's been a move in recent years to maybe put a National Football League team in London or somewhere else in Europe. As Ziggy Ansah talked about with Peter Clody, he wants to see a team eventually in Africa. And Major League Baseball as well, they've talked about putting a team in Cuba, perhaps, or other places, Puerto Rico, U.S. territory. So this isn't a new conversation about putting U.S. sports abroad, but fans are very encouraged by this move and seeing this action. There's a lot of questions about the expansion, how soon it might be until we have a National Basketball Association team in Mexico. A lot of fans asking that. They're also wondering, will my team be moved to Mexico? Maybe instead of creating a new team, they're going to move one out of the U.S. So a lot of speculation about that. But as many people are noting, there's a potential for huge market gains with this move, potentially more fans. And that means for the NBA, potentially more money, because more people wanting to pay for the games, more people wanting to buy jerseys, those kind of things. So lots of chatter about that on social media today. We'll continue to monitor that and let you know as that develops. And a sunny side of sports shout out to Kesley Whitmore is 17 years old. She was signed by the minor league Sonoma Stompers. Now, this is a minor league baseball team in California, one of the lower level teams that you start at and then kind of work your way up into Major League Baseball. But Kesley's making headlines because she is the first woman to get a hit in the minor league baseball game. She is the first female player to do so. And she's breaking down the so-called gender barrier, as a lot of people are noting. This is really exciting for her, but exciting for women in sports. There's been a lot of talk about which of the U.S. professional sports teams could be the one that breaks down this gender barrier, that has a woman play on the team. We've had in some sports, and like the NBA, the National Basketball Association, female coaches or assistant coaches. But we haven't had female players yet in the U.S. professional sports leagues. So there's a lot of interest in this, especially among women, that this gender barrier might be able to be broken. Now, Jared tweets that he's so excited by what the Stompers are doing for women, equality, and sports. Those are all great things, and it's going to be fascinating to see if that continues. I'll just read some other tweets here that we have from other fans. We have one from Scott who says, congrats to Kesley Whitmore for collecting her first base hit as a professional. And he gives an emoji with a thumbs up and a baseball and 100. So he's very excited about that. We have another tweet here from Grace. Grace says to Kesley, you are the coolest girl I know. Hashtag proud. Emily Van Buskirk says, it's awesome to just witness this. So just as a fan, she's excited to see that hit happen. Like we said, it's be interesting to see if this gender barrier gets broken down, and Kesley might be the first to do it. One of the sports, as many people are noting, that kind of lends itself to move from women playing the sport to men is baseball. You have a lot of softball players and could move into Major League Baseball. There's been talk also in the National Basketball Association. There's a very strong WNBA league here in the U.S., Women's National Basketball Association League. So people wondering if maybe some of those stars could move over and eventually play with the men. So we'll be continuing to monitor this, but a big sunny side of sports shout out to Kesley Whitmore for breaking this barrier. And you can actually go onto Twitter and Facebook. You can see video that was taken of her first hit as a professional in the minor leagues. It's an impressive sight. And it looks like looking at the hit that she was able to get to first base and advance the runners. So congratulations to her, Kesley Whitmore. You can find her on Twitter at Kesley Whitmore, and she might be one to watch for sure. I think she could be the one, like we said, to break that gender barrier, maybe move to Major League Baseball. We'll have to monitor her. Well, that about wraps it up here on the July 21st edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thank you all for tuning in with us out there in Radio Land. I want a special thanks to Voice of America producer Kwame Ofori, VOA engineer Nick Ivanov, and once again, thank all of you for tuning in out there. I'm VOA's Andrew Palcheski in Washington. We hope to have you back here tomorrow, and that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The shea tree is a traditional African food plant. Today it has many commercial uses. Increased trade in shea products, benefiting the economies of many African nations, will be the result of a $13 million five-year agreement signed this month in Accra, Ghana, between the Global Shea Alliance, or GSA, and the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, to promote shea markets worldwide and improve sustainable production in Africa. The shea industry is changing, and companies, governments, and donors are investing more in sustainable production and improving the benefit to 16 million women collectors and processors, says Mumuni Konate, president of the Global Shea Alliance. The goal of this critical partnership is to help women collectors and processors organize into cooperatives, obtain equipment and training, and improve the financial benefit from the sale of their products. Stronger and more profitable women's groups will process more shea, improve quality, and protect the trees. During the Global Shea Alliance's annual conference in Accra, Ghana, USAID West Africa Mission Director Alex Deprez said, "We know well the benefits of increased trade for rural communities across Africa. The partnership will match up to $6.5 million in USAID funds with $6.5 million in private sector funding raised by the GSA to implement promotional and sustainability activities in Benin, Burkina Faso, Cote d'Ivoire, Ghana, Mali, and Nigeria. These activities include launching research projects to improve shea tree planting materials, supporting tree planting campaigns and improved management of parklands, launching resource conservation projects to reduce wood and water use, hosting annual conferences and exhibitions in Africa, the United States, and the European Union, constructing 250 warehouses, health and safety initiatives, improving financial benefits by 50%, and providing capacity building and training for 137,500 women shea collectors and processors, and a variety of other international engagements to grow shea markets worldwide. The GSA is pioneering efforts to grow markets and improve the livelihoods of rural women and their families that stand at the base of the shea value chain," said USAID West Africa Mission Director Deprez. "We are proud to partner in these activities."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
With your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists, too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best. Right here on VOA Africa.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Malaria kills thousands of people each year, but there are some simple things you can do to protect your family. If you can, put screens in your windows. A simple screen can keep disease-carrying mosquitoes out of your home. If you go outside, wear light-colored clothing and long pants and long sleeves, especially when it is dark and mosquitoes are most active. After it rains, empty all containers of standing water. The water in just one discarded tire can become a breeding ground for thousands of mosquitoes. Make sure your home is clear of debris and anything that holds water, including discarded cans, water containers, and rubbish. Empty containers that livestock drink from regularly so that mosquitoes cannot breed there.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.